I think, unless we've got some feedback in this episode, I think we maybe spent a little too much time talking tennis last week. I mean, can't help it because the matches were so good. So at the risk of talking too much tennis, have you watched much U.S. Open?
I've watched bits and pieces. I watched last night's match a bit. It's fun to have two Americans this deep in the tournament. So you end up watching it. And then even on the women's side, Goff can potentially win it as well. Yeah. So it's exciting. It's exciting. U.S. Open have U.S. players doing as well as they are doing.
And it's been great tennis. Every match is a war. Every point is a war. You're listening to Financial Insights, a podcast that helps investors through the difficult maze of financial planning and saving for retirement. I'm Brian Ullman, and I'm a financial advisor and certified financial planner at Ford Financial Group. And together with some guests and other advisors at my firm, we're talking about the issues and questions relating to finance that face our clients every day. I want to dig in, and we'll do a market recap in a second. Some of the charts I have today were found on Twitter. Do you use Twitter?
I use Twitter quite a bit.
Or X, whatever we're calling it now.
Yeah, it's hard to get used to that, to the new name. But I use it for like news.
Okay.
You follow the people you want to follow. You know, you hear about things that other people are talking about, which then may interest you, which then you could kind of dive into it a little bit deeper. But it's fast.
Well, here's the question then that I have. Do you use Threads, the Facebook version of Twitter?
No. And not saying that I went – well, here's the first thing. I haven't honestly used Facebook in probably 4 or 5 years now. So that's probably
– Are you not even on it at all?
I have my profile on there from, you know, when I first started on it, but I don't go on it. Literally, I do not go on it anymore. And so for that reason, I don't think it's a really fair comparison to say I don't use Threads, because maybe if I was using Facebook, then I would be using it.
Yeah, I doubt it, man. I think everybody was all revved up.
I'm one of those people, like, if it became really big and there was a lot of people using it, people that I follow, and that became the place to go, I would absolutely go there, because I like the way that I get my news content, or kind of get some content from Twitter, as far as gaining like useful information. And so if it became that platform where everyone was on, I would absolutely go. I have no problem going to it.
Yeah. I think Threads was people looking for an alternative, but it turns out if you are a little bit of a power user and you can kind of filter your own Twitter X threads and, you know, in lists and things like that, it's much more powerful than just something you're flipping and scrolling through.
Well, now too, there's a monetization factor on Twitter too, which maybe makes it more incentivizing for people that actually have a following.
I'm not totally tuned into that. I do know that they are starting to pay out, you know, and doing more video. It's almost like it's becoming a YouTube competitor.
Yes.
As much as it's becoming anything. Heck, maybe we'll broadcast this thing on Twitter, X, whatever it is, one of these days. Okay. Well, let's jump in and let's talk markets. First, let's talk about the market for end rushers in the NFL, because football is starting tomorrow. I will tell you, the top of the market is Bosa. 5 years, $170 million extension with $122 million guaranteed. This came out in the last hour. Can you tell I'm excited?
Yeah. Well, no, I texted my friends and said, a sigh of relief. Bosa finally signed.
Yeah. But,
like, the season can start with us actually having probably maybe arguably our best player on the team actually there.
Yeah. And I'm not even
correlating Bosa's signing to the markets, Brian.
To the markets. Yeah, no, I don't think we're going to do that. This is not a sports podcast in any shape, way, or form. So we'll get off of that and we'll just go, you know, this is the last 10 days for markets. So kind of, I think, roughly since we last recorded one of these. We actually had a pretty decent end those last few trading days in August, and even these first couple days in September. NASDAQ's up 3%, S&P's up, 1.75%, Dow a little bit less than a half of a percent. Down some today on worries that, well, on a variety of worries. Some of our inflation worries. Some were talking about Fed. You know, everybody's still trying to figure out the Fed rate increase. I don't know. What do you think? We're in, we can't call the dog days of summer. We're at the end of summer, beginning of fall. What do you think?
Yeah, those two things definitely go hand in hand, right? I mean, inflation and the Fed are one and the same basically these days. But, you know, August, we had started off pretty rough. And so it was nice to have a little bit of a bounce back with the stock market. You know, then we'll get into this a little deeper in terms of like seasonality and stuff and what effect that has. But
yeah,
I mean, it's nice to see a little bit of bounce over the last 10 days.
Yeah, we'll take it. Certainly. I mean, August was the first negative month in five for the S&P 500. So we've been on a great run. There's no sell in May and go away going on here. But this kind of leads into your stuff and looking for, well, we can even maybe even start with the seasonality stuff. Why don't you explain your first chart here, Ryan?
Yeah, so this seasonality is really tied to the presidential election cycle. So if you think of, you know, president's cycle as being 4 years long, you know, this chart is showing quarter by quarter what it's done over the last, it's called 70 years, right? The S&P 500. And so this is by no means a timing mechanism, right? You're not going to use this and say, well, geez, I'm during this cycle, I'm going to invest. Yeah, let's in that middle portion of the chart where, you know, year two, quarter four, I get a 6.6% return. Let's invest there in the next couple of quarters. And then I'm going to skip a quarter and get in a quarter. You're not doing this. But it is interesting to see that, you know, through a presidential cycle that there are some kind of highs and lows that have generally happened if you average out the numbers. Funny enough, I will say this. If you kind of like glean towards the outliers, so say on the downside, the outlier is year two, quarter two, there's a negative 2.8% return. That did correlate pretty well with how bad things were last year. In fact, when I looked, the S&P was down about 16% in Q2 of last year, so much worse. Yeah. But again, it kind of speaks to the fact that for some reason that quarter, on average, again, has been a poor quarter. And to what was a tough year last year was a very hard quarter for us for both bonds and stocks.
And I see Carson on this. Did Dietrich put this together?
Yes.
Okay. I'll link to, I'm sure it's on, speaking of Twitter, I'm sure it's on Twitter. I'll link to it in the show notes so people can see it for themselves. So we're in Q3 now, of course, finishing up Q3, headed into Q4. Q3
is kind of a quiet quarter, as you can see by the standards of, you know, everything else. It's positive, but it's relatively muted. You can see in the middle chart again too, like the outliers were really Q2 or year two, quarter four, year three, quarter one. These are like the quarters we just actually went through. They actually were pretty decent quarters overall.
Well, it looks like Q4 tends to be pretty reliable also, right? Yeah. Where you look in year one, two, three, four, all good, I guess. I don't know. I mean, of course, not all good, but we're talking averages here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And again, we, you know, Q3 of this year with August being kind of tough, we'll see what September ultimately brings to us. Maybe it is just kind of a quarter that we get through and, you know, for kind of forget about. And then hopefully what holds true is Q4 of this year, we see a little bit of a pop for the stock. Yep.
Well, and so this is, I guess, getting to the seasonality stuff. This is a little bit of that same kind of, this chart that you've got here is kind of the same kind of ilk.
Yeah. So instead of looking at things from a quarter perspective or from a presidential election cycle, you're looking at purely just on like a monthly basis of what the stock market has historically done. This one's kind of interesting. Again, we're in September and this is the average monthly returns for the Dow Jones. And the one takeaway from this is that in the last 100 years, 50 years, the last 20 years, September on average has been a negative return. It is the only month in the calendar year that is a negative month for all three of those time periods. So it does, you know, historically, it tends to be a tougher month in terms of returns than the rest of the year.
Well, I will say one of the things that jumps out, I mean, September's highlighted in here. One of the things that jumps out, yes, it's the worst month, especially let's just look at the last 20 years, for example, but it's still positive 50% of the time. So even though it's negative for the last 20 years, it's a coin flip. It's the worst month of the year because most of these months, well, I guess June is down as positive only 40% of the time. We also just had a fantastic June. You know, it doesn't mean September is going to be bad, especially coming off of an August that was negative.
Sure.
You know, maybe there's some rebound that goes on. I know that's certainly kind of where we are here most recently. I mean,
I think on the flip side too, you know, as we kind of get towards the end of the year, one of the, if you're talking about seasonality, a lot of times we believe that when we get closer towards the end of the year, we start to get a stronger market as well. So again, if we get through the rest of the summer, September, let's call the being the summer period, you enter that fall, early winter period, it tends to be pretty good historically. As you can actually see by these numbers in the last 20 years, you know, October is up 1.3%, November is up almost 2%, December is up almost 1%. I think most people would be pretty happy if we saw a rally like that to end this year, especially given kind of where we are. We've had a market that's already been up this year. And if you were to add on top of it, I think people would be pretty pleased overall.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's seasonality can be tricky, right? Because you're worried. Your markets follow this kind of cadence, but it's so like, kind of like you mentioned, it's not reliable investing information. No. I think it allows you to say, oh, well, we're in a rough patch and it's September and this isn't uncommon, but again, not actionable stuff. You don't sell things in August because
you couldn't look at this information and say, this is why this happens. Right. You know, for example, you can't be like, April, the last 20 years has been the best month. Can you give a story why April's the best return in the last 20 years? Absolutely not. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It just kind of is what it is.
Well, I think it contextualizes. And so this is a good reminder as we were in a rough patch in August. I know I just sent a letter to clients talking about the difficulty that we had in August. And it's a good reminder that we may not be out of the woods yet, but boy, you look at those fourth quarter numbers again, like the last chart. I think they're promising, you know, not so much that you're going to, again, it's not actionable information necessarily, but it's reassuring, I guess, maybe is a better way of looking at it. I have some less reassuring stuff. I don't know where, I don't know how our shtick got to be where you're the optimist and I'm the pessimist, because it's not that you're pessimistic or optimistic necessarily, but I'm not pessimistic. But I think some of the difficulty today, markets were stressing about inflation and what the Federal Reserve is going to do with interest rates. And I think it's coin flipped that they raise rates another 0.25%, probably not here in September, but maybe in November and December, depending on what's going on. But the charts I have were in the last couple of days, we saw markets kind of moving because oil prices were spiking. I don't know if you read the news, Ryan, but essentially Saudi Arabia and Russia and OPEC Plus cut oil production over the summertime, and they elected to extend those production cuts through the end of the year. And so you've got oil prices spiking. I'll link to these different charts in the show notes so you can see they're taken from, I think one of them's from Bar Chart on Twitter. I'll link to the other one as well. But it's these charts aren't special because they're showing the pricing of oil and these spikes that we're getting. And even just kind of anecdotally, like gas has been getting this is oil, not gas, but one follows the other and tends to and can weigh on things. I don't know, if we have oil prices shooting up and high gas prices, maybe that's enough of a drag on the economy that they don't need to raise interest rates.
I mean, oil prices have been generally, I guess, rallying since early summer. And you know, the concern here, at least with the financial markets and how we tend to read into these things, is that a lot of times high gas prices can lead into a recession. And it sure makes sense, right? Because gas is one of those things that's going to be an expense to almost everyone. And if you're spending more at the gas pumps, you're going to have less money to be able to spend on other things. But in this world, everything's already seems expensive. I know we've talked about that ad nauseum about how expensive things are. But again, everything else is already expensive, and then now gas prices potentially could become more expensive, and you got to pay for that what seems like weekly. It could become just an additional toll that you know, you just can't end up spending that money on something else.
Yep. Next time we can do the jobs numbers, and I had the oil stuff here just because it's what's been going on most recently, but you can even see hiring is still growing, but slowing at the same time versus what it was. Oil prices back to going up, inflation continuing to creep. I don't know. I guess I'll follow this pessimistic trend of saying something's got to give here.
Well, you know, to add to that too, we think about it from, I think, a kind of a retail perspective in terms of gas prices, right? Like we all go and get gas, but realistically too, gas is in everything, right? Because transportation of goods, to make things, you're at the manufacturing plant, needs gas, like it's everywhere. So if gas keeps going up and stays high for long, it then gets put into everything else that we're also buying. We're also trying to fight inflation. And if you have, you know, goods going up because gas prices are high, that just causes more issues for us in the financial markets, because inflation is the one thing that we want to see that number go down, so we can have the Fed kind of go on pause at least.
Yep. Well, I don't think, you know, I don't want to say there's no takeaways from these charts. Obviously, prices are up and it's based on the headlines. And even today, I haven't looked, this is from yesterday, and I haven't looked today, I'm sure they've retreated a little bit. But, you know, I just think that this, you can add this to the list of drags that's going to put us in a recession in the first half of next year, where stocks can keep rallying here in the short term. But as we get into the intermediate term, I don't know.
Yeah, there's more concern as I think we go forward. Most of the economists kind of have said, you know, maybe we see a recession, you know, sometime early next year. I mean, there's quite a bit of people, I think, in that camp.
Well, the last one we went over with the leading economic indicators.
Right.
Pretty clearly screaming recession.
Where we stand, right.
It just never tells us when. It just says it's on the way. So, well, some good charts, some promising for the fourth quarter, short term. Some adding to the
growing concerns,
growing list of evidence that we're going to have some drags next year in the intermediate term, I guess you could call it. So we're staying consistent, I guess, from, is it, if we're doing this every 2 weeks, is it biweekly?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what's on your mind today?
So, you know, we've entered this world, my kid. So we're in that interesting school situation with my kids. My fifth grader, you know, traditionally would not be in middle school, but he's going to Baird, which is defined as a middle school because it's fifth to eighth grade, right? Yeah. So we've gone into this situation of thinking that he needs to have some kind of we're not getting him a phone, so it's kind of our parenting decision has been, we're not doing a full-on phone for my kid at fifth grade. But we do realize, like, with activities after school, kind of the way middle school works, there's a lot more activity going on. We need to have some kind of way to be able to communicate with him. So we've kind of been shopping around for some kind of watch that would allow us to text. And we've seen some of the reviews on some of the ones on Amazon, and I will say they're, you know, when you see 3 or 3.5 stars, you're like, I'm not so sure I want to spend a couple $100 on something that might be very mediocre.
We're doing this in real time.
Yeah. Here.
I don't want to say you should have asked me, but we've done this for our kids now.
Okay. My kids,
Henry's 9, but we have what's called a gizmo watch.
Okay. I've seen it.
I think it's only available through Verizon.
Okay, but, so that was one of the problems, right? That, like, it actually had pretty good reviews. We're on an extended plan. But then we had a friend say, well, just get him an Apple Watch. You know, you don't have to get the phone with it. But then that makes us go to Verizon anyways, because Xfinity doesn't allow for a watch that's standalone, that's not connected to a phone. So I don't know. We're in the predicament right now. We're not in a hurry per se, but I am definitely looking for like suggestions of ones that work well.
The Gizmo watch is great. Okay. You can see real-time location of where your kids are. If they get somewhere, they can just hit a check-in button. You can lock it so it only calls two or three people.
Yes,
so
I had heard that.
My wife and me and the grandparents, and that's the list. So there's no opportunity here to use this for anything other than like a parental communication device.
Yeah, that's all we're looking for.
It's been great. It's been great. And it's $100.
Here's the next thing. Now I need to go find someone that has a Verizon plan. Maybe it'll be you.
There you go. I've got a Verizon plan. And it's $10.
None of my family members have a Verizon plan. So that's, again, adding to the complication of how am I going to make this work?
Well, you go to Verizon. You upgrade your phone next week when Apple announces their new phone. Get you and your wife get new phones. The kids get Gizmo watches and you're off and rolling.
Everyone's happy. Go.
Problem solved. Yeah.
What's up with you?
So I was going to say that what's on my mind are these books that I've pre-ordered. One is the Elon Musk, Walter Isaacson book coming out next week. It's like the definitive Elon Musk book. The newest, most definitive one versus the last one that was out that was pretty definitive.
Yeah.
And then there's the Michael Lewis book coming out called Going Infinite that's on Sam Bankman-Fried and all the crypto stuff that was going on. So that's exciting. But what's co-opted that excitement here lately is I am stressing about my Rivian and what I'm going to do. If I'm going to get a Rivian or I'm not going to get a Rivian. I think I'm right up into the line. And I'm starting to buckle a little bit from like worries about charging and range anxiety and all of this other stuff that I'm sure every other person has worried about.
And to inform the viewers, he's worrying about range anxiety when he lives a mile away from work.
Yeah. It's more
and we have a charging stations right outside our office.
Yeah. I'm still like shell shocked from your charging nightmare a year ago when we went out of town for a conference.
Yeah.
But you know, Tesla is easy, right? It's just Tesla, and you use the Tesla charger, and it's easy to find, and they charge really fast. But having to kind of bootstrap a different charging situation together, I think, is what has me a bit concerned. So if you want to know what's on my mind, it's that I've been waiting on this Rivian for 2 years now, and it's starting to come to that time where it's going to be available to me, and I got to decide if I want to pull the trigger or not. And so I'm digging deep and asking those hard questions.
Well, now that's reality. You actually have to stress about it versus before it just seemed like a pipe dream because they were like 2 years away.
They may never call me. I will say they even updated me. My delivery time was supposed to be the end of next year, and they've moved it up by a full year. And moreover, there are even some, you forward me an email, there's even some that are available for purchase that have been built, but maybe not claimed. So what went from a really difficult car to get suddenly is available almost to, you know, within the next couple of weeks if you really want one.
Well, not to add to your stress level, but like if I had to say just from like a personal standpoint of charging a year ago or a year and a half ago, stations and the infrastructure.
Yep.
I feel like we're no better now than we were a year and a half ago.
No. I mean, some Tesla superchargers allow for other electric cars to charge there.
It's coming. Yes.
But none of them are in California.
Right.
They're all back east, or most of them are back east.
Right. It's coming. It'll happen. It's just a matter of time. But it just, if you're driving to Fresno, you'll love the car.
Yeah. No, everybody says having an electric car is like the upgrade that you didn't know you needed, but we'll see. I'm going to test drive it in a week. So I'll get back to you on the next one of these.
You have to give everyone a Rivian review.
Yeah, and I know these are like gold-plated problems, but I'm still stressing out about it. You know? So what are you going to do? Well, cool. Well, we'll leave it there. I think when we reconvene, I'll fill you in on my Rivian test drive, and maybe I'll have started the Elon Musk book so I can give you a halfway through book report.
That'd be awesome.
So, cool. All right, Ryan. Until next time.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
The advisors with Ford Financial Group are registered representatives with, and securities are offered through, LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice is offered through Perennial Investment Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Ford Financial Group and Perennial Investment Advisors are separate entities from LPL. The opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Stock investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. The economic forecasts set forth in this podcast may not develop as predicted. Ford Financial Group, Perennial Investment Advisors, and LPL Financial do not provide tax or legal advice or services. This information is not intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security referred to herein.